Okay, good. So welcome everyone for the Input Domain weekly call. Today we'll tackle a very interesting topic, which we at Human Colossus Foundation working on for some time already. And there is some synergetic work and parallel work done in the different places as well. And the topic is overall something which we call micro ledger. And I will explain in a second like why we call it that way and why it is interesting from the perspective of the decentralized ecosystem. So first of all, we started building that concept based on that what started with the digital identity space. So within the digital identity, as you know, the DIDs, the DID spec and the whole credential and all that stuff, which was promising to bring decentralized identity management into the ecosystem. In some cases, it got it there, but we know already that it doesn't work very well. And then the next generation of this kind of technology came up, which specifically I'm thinking about KERI, key event receipt infrastructures, which brought solutions to that space. So for example, how to take care of the rotation of the keys, how to do the delegation, how to do the multisig, how to bring the root of trust to the individual versus trusting some kind of network like black box, like blockchain or whatever else can be behind that. Where in many cases within that space, when people are talking about the blockchain, what actually they mean is the decentralization, which they would like to have. And a lot of projects got promised that if you use blockchain, you have this magical box, which is taking care of trust, right? As we know, trust is a human factor. It's a human thing. And as we realize is that if you have a blockchain without proper governance, the blockchain doesn't bring any value at all because it's just pure database with, you know, linked data, cryptographically verifiable and so on. So you can be assured about that the next block is the right one, but you cannot be assured about that the data which are there are valid or the veracity of the data. Like, how do you trust the data? If this is something which was done by the authorized person or not, and how to figure that out. So having a blockchain was not enough. So on top of the blockchain, the governance started building up to set the rules, like who can join or who can post, who can write, who can read, and you know, things like that. And if you think about that, so what actually we need is not the blockchain itself, but we need to have a proper governance framework in place. And then how the technology will be built on top, below it, it's detail, implementation detail in a sense. But blockchain has a certain properties which brought a lot of interesting aspects into the game, specifically about the assurance, like how I can trust that the data are authentic, that this information was generated by that specific individual or that specific company or that specific IoT device. So blockchain as a base, when you like, it really depends which definition you will use, but when I'm referring to the blockchain right now, I'm referring to the pure mathematical construct or cryptographical construct of the linked data cryptographically, right? Obviously, on top of that, you can have a different governance mechanism, like consensus mechanism and you know things like that, but that's not interesting. That's something which actually doesn't help much. I mean, really depends on the case, but what we try to do is to figure it out what are the core components or building blocks of the authentic data economy, right? So the KERI introduced this concept of bringing the root of trust to the individual so we can have interoperability across the networks, across the platforms or across the blockchains. Because, and I'm pretty sure that everyone on that call is aware of the ongoing discussions about DIT spec review process where Mozilla highlighted a couple of issues there and everyone is kind of, the whole space started shaking out a bit. And they are, in some of those points, they are completely right. One of the things which struggles me the most is that a lot of people saying that the DID and the decentralized identifiers as are they've defined right now, that they do not have the problems with interoperability. And that's partially true. Means that, yes, you have interoperability in the sense that if I have a DID, let's say DID solve, and you have a DID indy, we can still talk to each other. No problem whatsoever. We can establish secure communication. We can do whatever needs to be done. But the problem with interoperability, which I think is much more important, is that I'm free to take my DID and go somewhere else. So if I have a DID solve, I would like to move from that network to another network because, for example, the governance of that network falls apart. Or maybe they change the rules, which applies, which I don't like anymore, and I would like to take my identity and go somewhere else. And this is what is completely lacking in the specification right now. And that's, in my opinion, the most important aspects which people should address. Because if you are not able to take your identity and move somewhere else, means that you are tied to that specific network platform, you name it, and you're completely dependent on whoever steers that. If the steering will change, or you know, the people in charge will change the rules, for example, introducing, I don't know, a fees based on your interactions, then you basically, you have just choice to pay it or follow the rules or just get rid of your identity and bootstrap it completely new on another network, which is insane if we are talking about identity, because you don't want to lose what you have gained so far. So it will be very challenging to overcome those problems. So Kerry solved that problem. Kerry brought the solution that we can solve it by bringing the root of trust to the individual. So I decide where my identity can be visible and where I want to go with it. If I don't like this playground, I take my choice and I move to another sandbox. No problem whatsoever. So following that, that principles, we got into the way of thinking about the generalized concept of that what Kerry introduced, which is key event lock, which if you generalize it, you will get the data provenance lock. So how you can authenticate the information or the origin of the information which you are looking at, how you can verify them in a simple and tamper-proof way. So the key event lock introduced the concept of having this monotonic or linear chain where you're keeping track of the public key, how it's changing, how the keys are rotating, if something is revoked or something is delegated or something happens, so you can see what is happening and you can always get the proper answers depending on that what you need. But this is very specific case, means that this is just about the key. So if we will take those concepts and apply it on a much more general level, like any arbitrary data, you start thinking about the use cases like Git, versioning of the data, how you can authenticate information which are chained or introduced over time, and how you can verify it cryptographically and make sure that they are coming from the legit organization or individual. You could think of like event sourcing. Event sourcing is a concept of building up a state of the data according to the events which are coming from the system. And then you can anytime do the audit log of that, how the data changed over time and how you can recreate that data based just on the events which you are receiving. So it's very useful for auditing, for logging, for knowing or keeping track of the state within your system. But the event sourcing doesn't have any cryptographical characteristics. Means that if someone will have access to the table where the events are stored, he can basically change one of those events and pretend that that was the event which we got from another system, right? So, and following that concept, we tried to came up, and I will paste that link later on so you can have it, the specification we created as a kind of bootstrap for that discussion. I'll get straight to the example. So we look on those different problems or different use cases like attestation, key event lock, data provenance lock, Git, event sourcing. different types of the data which are requiring some sort of the authenticity. And we're trying to extract the base components or characteristics of the data model, which could represent what we need for that. So we came up with this. First of all, it's nothing new. I mean, a lot of other projects are using some of those concepts in a different ways. You know, the whole IPFS, Git, obviously a lot of stuff in the SSI space, blockchain is based on the same principles. It has just slightly different characteristics and the application, so a high-level implementation solution around that data model. So we wanted to generalize it in a way that, okay, what we need to have authentic data, like as a general concept. So if you think about the construct, it's simply that if you have any type of the information, any data, which you need to keep track or you want to create or do something with them, we basically have a chunks, like in a blockchain, you have blocks which are keeping track of a specific instance of the information or part of the information or whatever you're talking about at that given point in a secure way. So the block consists of a couple of things. First of all, the block has his own digital fingerprint, which is basically a digest, which is cryptographically linked to the content. What that gives you is that you can always, in a deterministic way, generate that digital fingerprint. You can verify it, that it belongs to that block, that it was not tampered, and is exactly the one which you are looking for. As you maybe remember, long time ago, we came up with the concept of decentralized resource identifier. That's basically was the, let's say, groundwork to get to the point where we can use that as a content addressable identifier. Currently, we call it SAI, so the self-addressing identifier, because semantically, it's a little bit better explain what it is, which gives you the possibility to provide a digital digest, so a hash of the content, which truly identify it, which is built into that content. So it's inside. And then you can obviously calculate that each time when you will receive that content. And this concept is as well, nothing new. BitTorrent is using this kind of mechanism. IPFS is using similar mechanisms. They are, each of those implementations slightly differ, but the concept, the principles are the same. So we have a digital fingerprint currently in the form of the self-addressing identifier, but it can be anything. And I will get to that in a moment. Then we have something which we call controlling identifiers. So what it is a component which tells you who is allowed. I mean, first of all, who is the owner of that thing and who is allowed to add a next block? Yeah, sorry. And that will be misleading. Controlling identifiers is just only the information about who is able to add a next block. So imagine in Git, if you have a code, source code, and it's truly decentralized, you're not using GitHub or anything like that, you do not have authorization mechanisms. Anyone having the copy, he can add stuff into it, and you can't say if he was the developer allowing to do that or not. This mechanism allows you to tell you that if someone wants to add another chunk, he needs to fulfill those requirements. And in many cases, this is a very simple mechanism saying that here's the list of the public keys of the identifiers who are allowed to add a next block. So you can cryptographically, having the next block, verify that the signature which you have over that block match the controlling identifier. So you can verify that whoever adds that piece here is allowed to do so. And you can extrapolate that to very simple cases, like if you have a scientific paper, right, or a book or an audio recording, you could encapsulate that in such a block and say that whoever is on that list is allowed to work upon that data set, and this will be legally bounding, or legally bound, let's say. In a context, for example, of IP rights, licensing, or any other rules which you would like to attach to it. So if you think about the carry have a very simple mechanism of controlling identifiers. It basically tells you that who is allowed to add a next block, which in that case, in most of the cases, is the identifier itself. So there is just one public key. If it's a multisig, you will have information about all the keys plus the threshold saying that, for example, 2 out of 5 keys are allowed to add a next block. And then obviously Carrie introduced as well pre-rotation mechanism, which tells you that in case if this key will not exist anymore, because it can happen, you can lose it, someone can steal it, you're committing to the next key, which then can be used to recover the ownership of this mechanism, right? So it can be really what you put here. Actually, it depends on the use case which you have and what you are trying to achieve. And then finally, you have seals. And the seals is basically a digest of the content which you want to encode. We do not allow to put the content itself into the block, purely for the security and practical reasons, or security slash privacy and practical reason. Because obviously, if you're speaking about a small amount of the data, like let's say a semantic schema version, let's say you can put the whole schema here, hash it and all that stuff, all the fine. But if you will put some kind of private data here, you're losing the privacy, because everyone who will have access to this piece of the data, this microledger, he will be able to read stuff. So here you will get the same kind of rules and the principles why you should not put something on the blockchain, because it's publicly visible as soon as someone will have a copy of it. So instead of that, you're creating a digest of the content, which is equivalent of putting the data itself inside from the security points of view. The security is the same. It's tamper-proof. You are not able to change the content. You are not able to fake it, because of the digest, which is built into it. And another reason is that practically, you can anchor here any amount of the data. It could be a few bytes, it could be a few gigabytes or terabytes of the data. For example, referring to the research data which someone generated out of, you know, some kind of, let's say from CERN, they're, you know, registering like a gigabytes of the data each time when they do the measure. So they are not even able to compute this kind of stuff. If you throw so much data here, it will be basically too slow and not practically usable. And then having the block, you basically do the signature. So based on the controlling mechanism, so who is the owner of that, the signature will tell you based who create that piece of the information. So that means that cryptographically, you can verify authenticity of that block, who created it, and then all the information inside allows you to get a different types of the use cases. So when you're doing the sealing mechanism, here you can see that the seals attachment are here, or the seals registry are here. Here's just an example of what that means, that if you have a digest, because if you have a digest, you need to have a mechanism how I can translate the digest to the data itself, right? So let's say it's a key which I need to get, the public key, right? So I need to resolve it somewhere, right? So obviously, depending on the use case, you can use the encoding mechanism with the attachments, that the block will have attachment in the form of that payload, so you can get it like in an offline way, in a sense that you don't need to go anywhere to retrieve it. But if you're thinking about the data, like, you know, terabytes of the information, you don't want to, you know, exchange that in the same protocols as you're exchanging those information about that something happened. You would like to have a separate mechanism which will provide the resolution mechanism. So you could imagine that you're using your TDA saying that I would like to see the payload which is here in that block. And then you reach a repository which is behind TDA, like, you know, personal data vault or the organization data vault or whatever else it will be. And you will get the data based on the, obviously, authorization mechanism, maybe, you know, some additional conditions applies to it that you need to fulfill some requirements. So the authorization can be done properly there. And from your perspective, as soon as you will get the data, you can calculate the digest. And you can verify that this is exactly the data which the owner of that block or the author of that block attests to, and cryptographically everything matched. And now having this kind of basic concept, you can obviously build up the chain as you like. It could be linear, as that is the case in the most of the blockchain solution, or in the case of Carry. But it could be a graph as well, a tree, like a DAG. It's up to you how you want to link those mechanisms together. And for example, you could imagine that I'm writing a book. I wrote a book and I anchor it here. And I say that anyone who is who will show me their full credential about that he is living in Europe, he is allowed to extend that work based on the licensing conditions which I attach to it. Means that, let's say, someone else will take that book, write another chapter, add the block to this microledger, and continue distributing it. So if someone will purchase that book, he will know that this chapter was addition to the original book, and you can cryptographically verify that this guy actually have a licensing rights for doing that, right? So obviously this is any use case which you could think of authentic data will fall into that category and use that model to link them together.
Robert, there's a couple of questions that come through in the chat. Should we go through those now while
yes.
they're kind of hot?
Of yeah. course.
I can read them out for you.
I was not monitoring the chat. Go.
Yeah, no worries. First one's from Stephen. Can controlling identifiers contain business logic aside from who can write the next block, i.e. can it behave like a smart contract?
Yes. And this is something which actually recently we tried to figure out how to do it, because a smart contract required a certain conditions where you can run it. So you need to have execution environment, secure execution environment, right? So you could do it by sealing all the stuff which is necessary to run this business logic to evaluate who is allowed to add the next block and how to, you know, do that. We don't have yet straight answers how to do it, because it requires some kind of, as I say, execution environment which you trust. Otherwise, you know, who will evaluate that logic, and how do you know that this logic was evaluated properly? So this computation, since you do not have any network or any nodes running that stuff, it needs to, you know, there are techniques which allows you to do that. For example, you can have a piece of software, execution environment, and the computation which is done within that execution environment, cryptographically verify that whatever comes out is according to the rules which were there. It means that no one modified the execution environment, no one injected anything into memory and stuff like that. And you can cryptographically verify the outcome, and this will be added as a new block. And then you can verify that all this stuff matches the rules which you specified. But short answer is yes. And we are looking into it, how to do it properly to make sure that you can have mechanisms like that.
Robert, could a TDA provide that kind of executional environment?
It doesn't matter what it will provide. So which kind of piece of software or what kind of technology will provide that. What matters is that if you can cryptographically verify that this is correct. Because if the TDA will be modified, you know, there are techniques of reverse engineering stuff, you know, decompiling and modifying the code in the execution environment. If this is tampered, you can't trust that information. If you can secure about the execution environment, or you can verify the execution environment was not tampered and everything was done correctly, then obviously it doesn't matter from where you will get it. A simple example is the execution environment on the like ARM trust zone, like the secure enclaves and this kind of stuff. This works exactly on the same principles, that you have execution environment, which is secure and cryptographically verifiable, and the outcome of that computation is cryptographically verifiable. So you can verify, like when you're bootstrapping, for example, a Windows instance, you can verify from the BIOS till the bootstrapping operating system, application, and so on, that nothing was changed and everything is done according to the rules which were set. So there are mechanisms for that. We just need to figure it out how to technically tie that to this kind of offline module, which can travel in many places in different jurisdictions.
Perfect. I got another question here from Karen. Would this allow for parsing of a VC, for example, pulling age from your mobile driver's license?
So this one goes into the kind of higher level logic, which obviously this can allow you to build this kind of mechanism. So if you are aware of ACDC, Authentic Chain Data Containers, this is a generalized concept how to solve some of the problems of the Verifalo credential as it is defined in the W3C. So this mechanism allows you to build the Verifalo credential in a way that you can achieve what you're asking for, with not only a possibility to verify that those information are correct and you're honest from the perspective of that what you're showing, but obviously you need to have for the Verifalo credential, you always need to trust the issuer, right? So you obviously can provide through that mechanism the information which you have. Depending on the use case, you can do a selective disclosure with that ZKP, BBS, this kind of mechanism. That doesn't change that logic which is built on top of that. What this gives you is gives you the security of every single piece what was used to build that up. So, for example, in the Verifalo credential data model right now, the implementation assumes that you're using a JSON-LD context for some of the schema which are used to generate the Verifalo credential. If the schema will change or something will not be accessible through that link and you will not have that information, the credential will not be verifiable. Means that they are lacking of the authentic data for the schema components which are used to generate Verifalo credential. Means that if you create a W3C data model Verifalo credential, you need to verify or you need to cache basically the whole RDF graph behind that. Otherwise you can't cryptographically verify anything. And that complicates like everything and makes it basically unusable in a real production system. And this is why ACDC addressed that in a proper way using the immutable objects linked together like OCA, overlays capture architecture objects, which you can have the composition of those objects and truly verifiable no matter where you go and to whom you present that. So it's all about the authentic data. And this is what needs to be. So we believe that this data model can be used in the Verifalo credential space in all those use cases which I mentioned to provide the security, because that's the only way that you can get security in place to make sure that you can build secure system on top of that.
One from Carly. Are the seals functioning like putting the hash of the data as a transaction on the blockchain, i.e. anchoring onto the chain?
Yes, that's the same idea, that you calculating the hash, you throw it in the place where you can cryptographically verify later on that, for example, it happened in a given point of time or it's part of that blockchain. You trust the blockchain so you know that the history was not tampered and there is an anchor on that blockchain with that information. It's the same example, it's just here we're taking out the whole piece of the network. There is no need for the network from that perspective. You're getting exactly the same assurance about the verifiability of those pieces. And then obviously on top of that, you can build a mechanism like, for example, in Keri, duplicit detection, which assure about that you are not duplicit in the context of that what you are saying, because if you're the owner of the ledger, you can rewrite the whole history, right? Anytime. If you need to have assurance that this ledger was not rewritten, then obviously you need to have additional mechanisms on that. But this data model allows you for that. And just to give you an example, in the supply chain, which we are working on right now as well, this kind of model allows you to build up this micro ledger. And each time when the package, let's say that we are sending a package of vaccines or food or whatever it is through the whole supply chain, traveling from India to Middle East to Europe, this ledger is attached to the package and passed from one entity to another. So now you will ask, like, how you're sure that no one of them will modify anything and everything will be done in a correct way? It's because of the controlling identifiers here. So let's say the package starting on the farm in India, they generating the first block saying that we created this amount of food according to these standards and so on. Then let's say auditor comes in, checks that really those mangoes which they produce, it's eco-friendly, do not use any pesticides and stuff like that. And adding the block into this micro ledger. So the controlling mechanism will change. The controlling authority over that block will be the auditor who assure about this information. Then they say that, okay, the package, so the food will be transported by some, let's say FedEx, right? Or whoever is able to do a logistic for them, right? Then the controlling mechanism will change. And the only way what they will be able to do is to add next block. They will not be able to modify anything which was in the past, because as soon as they do it, you can easily detect that and the microledger will not be verifiable. So immediately you are getting a technology which do not use any ledger network, like blockchain ledger, like DLT network, where everyone needs to connect and put somewhere information. It's like passing this ledger to each entity which is able to add just next block and then give the control to another entity and so on. So as soon as your consumer in the Europe, let's say in Germany, you're visiting the store, you're scanning the barcode on the mango or whatever it is, you can verify the provenance log of that information, like where this product came through, like what was the journey, who took part in it, what kind of information were attached to it, what are the quality standards? Is there any certificate as assuring about that it use only, I don't know, eco-friendly transportation, whatever, is that you don't have to go anywhere except to the last guy who actually received the block, received the micro ledger, and it's passing it to you. This is what is an interesting concept of, if you think about the after sales in the supply chain, like for example, cars. If you are running supply chain on the blockchain, you will need to sooner or later introduce the customer to that blockchain, which generates tons of privacy issues and other problems. But you can imagine that having this micro ledger, you can take your car, sell it to your neighbor, pass the micro ledger to him, and he can add an X block. And for example, adding the blocks about the maintenance history and notes, stuff like that, without going to any blockchain whatsoever. And if someone will buy the car from him, he will be able to prove that all that stuff is true because of the authenticity of those data structure. And obviously you need to have a governance framework to, for example, resolve the identifiers of those guys to see if actually this guy is a real mechanic or is fake one and so on and so on. But that's the governance layer anyway. The blockchain or any other solution is not able to provide you that solution. So
Robert, that answer. A couple more here. Excellent. A couple more. One from Stephen. Would it point to an ACDC? Is that where you do that? Or isn't an ACDC? Yeah. How does it work?
So the seal can point to any arbitrary data. It can be anything, right? So you can say that this seal points to my master thesis or book or audio recording or verbal credential or whatever you want to anchor on that chain, right? So what kind of, you want to say that you're assuring about the authenticity of the data which are included. That's the interesting part is that the seal represents any arbitrary payload. Whether the logic of that payload is up to the application layer. So you can say that whenever you will see in this block, a data payload, which is key event log, you apply the logic from carry and you're going through those process and, you know, have additional rules and so on. If you will see here, ebook or some kind of content, you could have a logic on top of that saying what you can or cannot do with it and so on. So it's up to you what you will anchor. And then to give the, comparing that to the ACDC, this actually will maybe not replace ACDC, but it will bring the base components of ACDC to the level where it can be applied to any other spaces. And ACDC will just use that mechanism to do the chaining, because this is purely a authentic chaining containers, right? The blocks are the containers, the chaining mechanisms are the digests and the signatures, and you can build as complex as you like.
Okay, so it could replace ACDC potentially. We'll see how it goes.
The idea is that it won't replace ACDC. It will just provide a data model which is generic enough that you can build on top of different use cases, assuming that you need authentic data, right? So eventually, it's like It kind of replaces ACDC, but you need to still have some logic because, for example, in ACDC, we have the rules section. The rules section tells you, for example, what are the consent or the data agreement of the user who's putting the data here. So obviously here we don't have anything like that. This logic sits into the seal. So if you read that blog, and inside there will be an audiobook, and to which it will be attached the licensing model or consent that you can use that information in that and another way, that's something which goes into that. And ACDC like expands that concept to go to the level where you can have rules, semantic of the data, which is as well in there, so you can understand what is inside. And you know, connecting all those pieces in the business logic. That's the kind of underlying data model for it.
Perfect. And Neil's got his hand up. Neil, do you wanna ask a question?
Well, not so much ask a question. To me, this is what your supply chain is. I've struggled with ACDC because you don't want to be moving data independently of a chain recorder. So this is what I would call a supply chain recording mechanism, where each of the transactions is happening in the supply chain. And if you've got a fan in of, say, five suppliers feed a particular node in the supply chain, then you've got four transactions, right? And then there's processes that happen in that node, and it passes down to the next chain. So each one of those things is a transaction you're going to capture in, and this provides you what I'll call workflow, or what literally call it workflow provenance, right? You're providing an ability to show a series of actions in a manner that's cryptographically sealed, which is exactly the supply chain. So as a use case, this appears to be fairly obvious to me. And if you're doing that, you don't need to move that thing separately through a portable container. You have the next thing in the supply chain point back to this chain for its information. So in other words, moving the data makes it vulnerable. If it's got to come to a controlled registry, a micro ledger about that, then just go talk to the registry. If you've got instructions that pass between blocks, that's a series of instructions. That's not passing any data. Right.
And actually the main concept, like why we started thinking about that, is that within the dynamic data economy principles, which we are working on at Human Colossus Foundation, we came to the conclusion that there is no way that the data can be moved or shared without the authenticity and the rules attached to it. There is no way that you should allow to pass the data in any other form. And the reason is simple. First of all, you will not be able to audit the information if they came in a right way or, you know, from the source and so on. You will be able to have control over that, how the data will be passed further on down the chain. Like, for example, I'm sharing the data with Facebook, and then there is 100 companies behind that which using my data, and they have a different consent that I gave to Facebook, right? And you have no way to check it. And this is why, if we want to have a privacy preserved mechanism for sharing the data and managing the data, so truly decentralized data management solution, we need to treat data in a form of authentic data. Means that it needs to be authentic, it needs to have a controlling mechanism, it needs to have a consent and all those pieces all together. Otherwise, raw data are not interesting. And just to give you an example from pharmaceutical industry, companies are collecting enormous amount of the information. Then they are applying anonymization to make sure that they strip out all the sensitive information, right? And what they getting end up with is that they have a data set which is completely decoupled from the source, means there is no patient attached to it at all. They don't know from whom it came. Now the question comes in is like, how we can use the data? Okay, we can't ask the patient if he allows us to use it for that specific use case or if we can share it with another company because there is no patient. We lost that information. We don't know what was the consent attached to it because consent could be per patient and the patient is gone. So you're losing basically you're breaking the provenance chain. You have a bunch of the data which no one knows how to use it and if it's legally allowed to be used. And you are in the gray area. You don't know if and how you can make make that work, right? So this is why, if you will, as we show that on the example of the data sharing engine through the project which we did in the Human Colossus Foundation, where you have the semantic and the data and the consent baked together, you can strip out all the sensitive information, still keeping the linking mechanism towards the patient in case if you need to ask him about, do you agree to use that data for the purpose of another research, right? Without revealing your privacy to anyone or storing that information even in the Plex.
So Neil was also saying, do you ever need to move the data?
I mean, yes and no. It means that in most of the cases, you don't need to move the data. It can stay with you. And the other party will always have a cryptographical assurance about that the data are authentic. So currently, as you know, in platform-based approach, you're securing the location where the data are, and this is why you trust the data. We are flipping that around and saying we are securing the data and we don't care about the location anymore. You don't need to secure the location anymore. You're securing the data. So no matter where the data flows, the data are secure and you have the proper chain, the provenance chain around it. If you're focusing on securing location, if the location is, security of the location is broken, you lose all the data. If you move the data outside of that location, you lose the security aspect as well. So a simple example, if company A wants to share the data with company B and company A has a higher security standard for protection of the data and the company B actually have a lower, if the data moves to company B, the data automatically decrease the security of itself because of the location. Where we are saying is that I can give a consent and security about my data directly from me. I'm saying that I'm allowed to use those information only for the research purposes. And no matter where the data will travel and how many hopes and how many companies, everyone knows exactly how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very cool, Robert. Was there any, I might have missed the odd question here or there in the chat. Did anyone want to pipe in with a question that I might have missed?
Hey, Robert, can you talk about the seals attachment in the registry a little bit? Not sure I understand the context.
So when you have a blog where you're attaching some payload into it through the digest, right? Having a digest doesn't give you the payload, which is behind it, right? So now the question is how do you access the data, which is like a subject of that blog, right? So there's two ways. Or you will take this digest, go somewhere, and this somewhere is the registry, and ask, please give me the data, number, and here is goes the hash, right? Like IPFS, right? You give the hash, you get the data out, right? So obviously this mechanism, the resolution mechanism, can depend on the use case. It could be, you know, blockchain-based data structure, it could be IPFS, it could be a centralized server provided by a centralized authority, or it could be simply a BitTorrent network where you say that I looking for this hash and people whoever have that hash will provide you the data, right? So it's up to the use case, how you're doing the resolution mechanism here and how you're providing it. But in some of the cases, and obviously the most, let's say, the recommended way will be to do it as we did that from the perspective of the TDA, that you know who I am because of the blog. You know what digest you're looking for. So obviously I'm the guy who will know exactly where the data can be found, right? Because I'm the owner of the data. So if I move the data from one location to another, or I change the authorization mechanism around that, I will know that because I'm the owner. So normally what you take the digest, you go to my TDA, you ask, I would like to access this digest. Can you provide me the copy of that data right now? The TDA obviously can verify if you are authorized to access the information, different mechanisms through the VCs, through whatever else you need that. And you can basically point him and send him data over email, give him a link, send it over some kind of streaming mechanism, whatever is needed, right? In some cases, you would like to encapsulate all the information in one place. Like, for example, Git, right? You have Git objects directly in the Git repository. So you're attaching the payload directly to the blog. So when you're doing the serialization of that blog, you're saying that this is the blog with the signature. And then you're attaching to it. So everything which comes after this byte is the attachment in the form of Base64 or, you know, whatever the encoding mechanism you will have. And as soon as you get the microledger, you get everything what you need to obviously verify it, because you could include, you know, the public keys could be here, the data could be attached, and you can, you know, check all the stuff and get the information by the way. So this is where the case of the, you know, supply chain, where you're passing the information further on without need to reach any centralized server or decentralized server to request for something. So everything is embedded. So or you attach it, or you point where it can be. I mean, the pointing mechanism, as I say, it's really up to the use case.
Mm-hmm. Got one from Vitor here. So Vitor, first of all, said it looks like a sign and forward framework similar to the store and forward concept. I don't know if you know what that is, Robert.
Not sure, but happy to learn about it. If you have any links.
Let's presume yes, because Vitor's pretty bright, so I think it probably is a yes.
Yeah, if it looks like that, then probably it looks like it. Because as I said, there is many similar concepts up there in the wild, and some people mm-hmm. are pointed out that holochain is similar or some other, you know, mechanism. Because what we are trying to do is to come up with this generalized concept, a generalized data model representing authentic data. And as you know, authentic data are, you know, a kind of a thing right now. Everyone is looking for a solution. So some people have a very narrow implementation of it, like for example, IPFS or IPLD, where there is no, for example, digest agility and stuff like that. But yeah, there's all a similar concept. But if you have any links to the whatever you do, a store and forward concept, yeah. I'm happy to learn about that.
Cool. And then Vitor had a question. So is the data transferred with the ownership of the digest, or in order to see past data one needs to go back? Sorry, I'm reading this terribly. Vitor, do you want to just read it?
Yeah, so the idea is, okay, so you have a verifiable chain of information, but you don't know what the information is unless you go directly to each owner in the past and request the data that is relative to that digest, right? So in many ways, you can verify that the data has been changed correctly, but you don't know which owner changed what unless you go to each one of them and request the original copy of the data, correct?
Correct. And this is actually something which in some of the use cases is very desired, that you don't care about the middle steps. You don't want to know who changed it and what. You just want to verify that everything was done according to the rules, and you have the end result, and you're fine with that. So you have this privacy mechanism, right? So for example, who did the audit? I don't need to know the name of the guy. I just need to know that this guy had a license to do so, or something like that, right? And if you want to have everything at once, you can have it. If you will do the seal attachment and you will attach data to each block as soon as you're passing it further on, right? So it really depends on the use case which you want to have. If you want to have a privacy preserve mechanism and decouple the data from the blocks, you use the seals registry. And if you want to embed them, you just use the attachment, and you can have either scenario.
Yeah, interesting. On the idea of selling your car type of thing, it's interesting because you can sell the same car many times, and people will be doing things to the car in the middle of the way, and you know, getting into accidents and fixing it and so on. So in the end, you get something that you can prove that it was linked to the original car, but you don't know which of those people in the chain actually damaged and who fixed it. So that's an interesting concept that I couldn't grasp from the text alone.
Yeah, let me just add to that, because you know the Bob Alice sells the car to Bob is the classic use case comes out of the SA Sidebox. So I've taken it to the next step, said Bob buys a house from Alice, and now we get into all the legal ramifications and all the many different players that happen in a house, which is perhaps even a bigger issue. Like someone, you know, is the third buyer of a house, and they find there's a crack in the foundation. Well, they need traceability back to find out who, if there is somebody who is publicly responsible for that. Say a guarantee, you know, there was a 10-year warranty by the builder of the house and you're the third buyer in those 10 years, I need to be able to get to the person who is responsible for this separate document. It's included in the transaction flow for buying a house, but it's a transaction within that. It may have a link. So it gets very complicated very quickly. And I suspect, Vitor, that the answer is there certain information is public saying person X, and you may have the answer, you may have, you know, let's say a pointer or, you know, a private pointer to somebody that you cannot dereference as to who the person was that first sold the house. So there would certainly be private information that, you know, for the integrity of the house selling process, I can guarantee you in various lawyers, shall we say bank vault, there is details of everybody who is in the transaction at an extremely personal level, right? So in order for there to be accountability in such a system, you're going to have the deeply private information that has to be there at some point or traceable under a court order or something else, versus what information is public about the transaction, right?
I think you can do something with the semantics on that, can't you, Neil? So if you were to flag all of the PII and the semantics that were to capture the data, then you could have some machine logic somewhere at a higher extraction that either masks it or shields it within this this block. Could you do it that way?
No, absolutely. You know, in some cases you may prepackage it. In the other case, it could be an access action. In other words, when a request comes in for the information, there's a dynamic filter that filters the query results back out. So it says, you know, there was a person who did this, and I might, you know, maybe they were in New Brunswick, you know, maybe it says where this person came from. That's depersonalized, but still give you some understanding. But it's going to be, you know, walking through, you know, like a real life use case, I think is going to be interesting about this.
But just to finish, the specification as it is today does not allow to include any public records. So it has to be fully private. You can't have, you know, certain aspects of the record in the chain while others are hidden from it.
Well, if that's the case, then I think it needs to change, because if I want to look at and go at, you know, if I'm looking for a house, I'm scanning a site, then I want to be able to know this thing has been sold 4 times in the last 5 years.
Yeah. So maybe I can answer that, because the way how the spec is written right now, it allows to attach the data to it. It's up to you to decide if the data will be public or not. So that's the reason why the sales registry versus sales attachment is here, because if you want to decouple the data from the ledger, from this micro ledger, you basically put it somewhere else. It's not public. It's completely private. No one will be able to see it until someone else will provide that information. If you want to attach the data to the micro ledger itself, so as soon as you get a copy, you get the data, you can attach it directly to each block and you will have that information. Now, if the data are sensitive and you don't want to let anyone to see the data, you're basically encrypting that attachment in a way that only, for example, controlling party is able to decrypt it and verify what is inside or see the content, right? If you don't care about that and you say that it's completely fine, that anyone who will have a copy of that microledger will see the data, you just put it in a, you know, serialize the data and just attach to it. So it's really up to the use case to decide how it needs to be done, and both cases are completely valid.
Hey, Robert, I know you were working on ACDC implementation. So do you have an implementation that is now aligned to this data model?
Next week.
Okay.
We are targeting to have the ready code by next week to show how it works. And basically it's very similar concept to what ACDC introduced. It's much more generalized. And what I wanted to add to it, like why we are generalizing it, because each of the components, which you saw above, can have a different implementation. And it's up to you to decide which implementation you will choose. So for example, for the SEAL interface, you can use a different payloads, which brings you a different logic, what you can do with the data, which is there. You can use a carry event there to build up key event log. You can use a Git object to build a Git on top of that. You can do any type of the event sourcing at the station, anything. You decide what goes into the payload and how you implement that. Then you have the controlling identifiers. You can use carry for it. You can use a DID for it, saying that this DID is allowed to add the next block. If you are using DID web, you need to go to take the public key and then verify that that this guy actually is allowed to add the next block. If you use just pure PGP or private public key infrastructure, where you just embedded the public key into this mechanism, you have the public key already there. You don't need to care about decentralized identifiers, anything like that. You just go for it. You just know that this is the implementation which you chose for that specific ledger. Obviously, what we're recommending is to use always carry, because not only that you get the mechanism in place properly, but you have a security aspects like, for example, key rotation, that if you lose your key, you can still recover the access and the controlling mechanism over that ledger through the mechanism which carry introduced. Following further, signature interface, you can use SCID, so self-certifying identifiers, which carry brings. You can use 509, you can use any centralized PKI, you can use DIDs, whatever works with the signature. You can use ADAS as an implementation of that component, so it means that it will be compatible with the digital identity of your government. The digital fingerprint, so the mechanism, the linking mechanism, you could use self-addressing identifier as we do, or you could use a multi-hash or maybe hash links or you know, any other concept of having the digest of the content which is there, like IP, so it's called CID, I think, is that the identifier of the content IPFS? They have as well a different mechanism of calculating that because they have an algorithm for partitioning and stuff like that. And then encoding interface. Obviously, there are different types of encoding the data. The CSER, which is using carry, the CDE, which is introduced by the trust frame, the multicodec, which is widely used in the, I think, blockchain ecosystem. You have HOSE, COSE. You have a different types of the data representation and data encoding, which is up to you which block you want to use. And obviously, each of this implementation will have a different security measures, right? Because obviously, if you use the DID and it's DID web, then you can obviously hijack the domain, inject the DID document, and you can take over that microledger. You need to be aware of that. And it's really up to the use case, which components you want to use, and how you choose that. The reason why we did it that way is because there is no way that we'll get a consensus that everyone agrees on one implementation. We already see how it works with the DID. We already see how it works, you know, the stuff which is done in the trust over IP versus DIF. And there is tons of other ecosystems like, you know, the work done, the SensorLag, the European Standardization Committee, they have own idea how to do stuff. So we need to have the agility to provide the mechanism which suits everyone. Obviously, remembering that we can't go insane and, you know, that we want to cover everything, it's just that we want to figure it out which of this implementation is the best. And the community will decide after, you know, different tries and POCs, what works and what's not. And then you will came up with two or maybe three combination of those components, which everyone will use because they will realize, okay, that's the work the best. The open source or virtual commercial, it's, you know, community will decide, but there is a flexibility to just test a different version of it without sacrificing or rebuilding the whole spec or rebuilding the whole concept all over the places, which obviously will lacking of the interoperability and portability of those mechanisms.
Robert, for comments on the spec, Neil's saying, should they do that on GitHub directly?
Definitely. That was the reason why we used the generous Microsoft system to put that there so everyone will be able to access it. Obviously, you need to have a GitHub account to do so, but I think that that's not a problem. In the future, we'll have a dedicated mechanism for that, which will be based on the authentic data economy, based on the decentralized identifiers and the microledger, where you will be able to provide a comments to any specification in a truly decentralized way. But we are not there yet. But so far, any issues, any comments, any feedback, feel free to reach me directly or throw it on the GitHub, and we'll take it from there.
Fantastic. There's a lot to digest, but thank you, Robert, for doing all of that.
Awesome work. Thank you.
Yeah. Everyone happy-ish? I guess once we see the implementation, I guess people have a better idea, right?
Yeah, there's an old saying in sales: there's no sale without an objection.
Yeah.